he needs to show his muscles off. Yeah. Joe Conroy, alcoholic. You guys talk funny. It was the pig fair last September, the day I well remember. I was walking down the streets in drunken pride when my knees began to flutter and I fell down in a gutter, and a pig came up and lay down by my side. As I laid there in the gutter thinking words I could not utter, I thought I heard a passing lady say, "You can tell the man who boozes by the company that he chooses." And with that, the pig got up and walked away. Yeah, baby. So now you know I'm from Memphis, right? So originally from Memphis, so you can understand me. Wow, this has been, I got here this afternoon, and then Steve, thank you, man. Just like, I'm originally from Boston, if you haven't figured that out already, right? Okay, so we'll get that out of the way. I've been sober since January 1st, 1989. November of, thank you. November of 88, I'm in Boston, and I'm drunk. And my solution was to move to San Diego because I was drunk. And I moved to San Diego and lived on the streets for the next 3, 4, 5 weeks, whatever it was. And I got sober on January 1st, 1989. I took my last drink on New Year's Eve, 1988. I didn't know what a last drink was until about 2 or 3 months before that, when a member of Alcoholics Anonymous 12-stepped me in Boston, told me there come a time when I'm done with drinking, if I ask some power greater than myself for help, I'll probably never have to drink again as long as I live. And that's when I moved. That was that was my solution. I love being sober. Chad, we've been chatting, emailing, talking. We sat and had dinner tonight. Interesting conversations. I love being sober. I'm looking for the guys with the red shirts. Are you all over here? I guess you're all in recovery, right? In a sober home, I would imagine. That candlelight thing just killed me. I don't know why. You guys have probably been through it, but that just knocked the shit out of me, actually. It was just like, but before that, it was the guys at the door handing out the candles, you know? Really. Really. It might not mean anything to you guys now, but you touched a lot of people when you walked through walked through those doors, you know? That's what we do. One candle lights everybody's fire in here. Bill Wilson walked around for 6 months, waiting, looking, helping, hoping, somebody, anybody. God, this is not working. This is ridiculous. And he meets a guy in Akron, Ohio, not far from here, right? And all of a sudden, one candle. Bob didn't go looking for the candle. Bill had the candle. He was looking for somebody else's candle to light. He was looking for somebody else's fire. God, I love being sober. I drank a lot. All right? I drank in Nashville, believe it or not. I was in the Coast Guard. This doesn't make sense to a lot of people. I was in the Coast Guard, first duty station, Leavenworth, Kansas. Right? Right? On the Missouri River. St. Louis, Missouri, on the Mississippi River. Nashville, on the Cumberland River. I've been all over the Midwest and the river systems of this country. I stood on Johnny Cash's front lawn to put a navigation light in there years ago. I remember we had the captain of the boat there. I wish I could remember his name. I think it was Sutherland. You know when you drink with people, you want those people to be sober? This is one of those guys. He was from Paris, Tennessee. I've been in Paris. I have no idea where it is, right? We were at a crappie festival. I don't know what a crappie is, but we were at a crappie festival. And we went drinking at a place. It was called the Big Apple. And I'll never forget it. Do you know where the Big Apple is? God, it had the dirtiest toilet I've ever seen in my life. It was like black. And oh, it was just crazy. And then I drank in a place, I think it was called the Boston Club. If anybody knows, I have no idea. That was 30 years ago. And that was it. I don't remember anything else besides Nashville. And the fact that I'm here at the Interaction Conference, 36 years in the going, doesn't make sense, right? It doesn't make sense. The fact that you guys stood at the door with red shirts and handed out candles made no sense to you tonight. I bet you were going, this is, you know. But somewhere along the line, somebody might come up to you at a meet and go, hey, I saw you handed out a candle, man. I was ready to go out the door, and you lit my fire. You handed me a candle. You just said hi. You just said welcome. That's it. That's it. You know, we don't need much in here, but we need each other. We need each other. If you think you can do this on your own, you'll be really disappointed with Alcoholics Anonymous. Trust me. You'll be really disappointed. You know, and it's just such a great way of life. And I wish I could tell you you could get it instantly. I wish I could tell you you could get an app on iPhone or a Galaxy or whatever they're coming out with, and you can find sobriety like that. If you want 30 days, what's it take? 30 days. If you want a year, it takes 365 days. If you want the moment, it takes that. And if you can just live right there, you'll never be disappointed with Alcoholics Anonymous. But what happens, we come in here and we want the stuff. If I suffered from a material malady, the stuff would straighten me out. I suffer from a spiritual malady. What does that mean? I have to have a spiritual solution? You mean God? Damn it. No. It's got to be something more than that. Won't a nice house in Brentwood work? In La Jolla? In Rancho Santa Fe? No. You got it. You got it. Everything you have for sobriety is deep down inside you. It's all there. It's kind of like I've been thinking about this a lot, and I think a lot. I'll go into some conversations and won't finish them, and you guys will be disappointed. Because I think, and then I go, oh, I'm going to go down here, you know? But like Michelangelo, I was talking to somebody and they said, I don't know how true this is, not Michael, the statue David, right? They said, this is the most beautiful thing you've ever created. He said, I didn't create anything. I chipped away the excess. And that's what Alcoholics Anonymous does. We don't create alcoholic people. We chip away the stuff that's blocking you from the sunlight of the Spirit. We chip away the stuff that's making you live miserable, intolerable, angry, resentful, hateful, spiteful. Oh yeah. We chip that stuff away and we replace it with love and tolerance and kindness and peace. P-E-A-C-E. Yeah. A lot of people come in here looking for peace, but it's not P-E-A-C-E. And I got to say that because a lot of times people get turned away from Alcoholics Anonymous because it's the wrong peace. Okay, that's all I'm going to say. Anyway, wow, that was heavy, Georgia. But when I got here, I didn't like any of this stuff. I didn't like the guys at the door greeting me. I didn't like the fact that you lit candles. I didn't like the fact that you say prayers. I didn't like the fact that you say, who's new and what's your name? Hi, Joe. I didn't like any of that stuff. I didn't like the fact that people wanted to hug me. I didn't like the fact that you wanted to shake my hand. I didn't want nothing you people had. Nothing. I didn't like any of it. And I didn't want to drink anymore. And that's why I told you the guy 12-stepped me on the banks of the Charles River in Boston weeks before I got sober. It didn't make sense to me why he's saying things to me. It was like, wah, 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 wah. It made no sense at all. And I'm, Jesus Christ, how can I get away from this guy? This is ridiculous. Jesus, he's just boring me. Why does he have to go on and on and on? And you know this is what it's just like, oh my God, everybody's so passionate about sobriety, and they want to give it away to the person. I'm like, Jesus, is he ever going to shut up? You know? And then he shut up, and I was like, I got to go. Just an out. I just needed an out to get away. It didn't make any sense to me. But on January 1st of 1989, I'm repeating the exact same words he said to me when they didn't make sense to me. I said, my God, I'm an alcoholic. I need help. My God, I'm an alcoholic. I need help. There'll come a time, he said, when you're done with drinking, if you ask some power greater than yourself for help, you'll never need to drink another again. And I said, my God, I'm an alcoholic. I need help. It didn't make sense to me on January 1st, 1989. It still really doesn't make sense to me. But on that moment, I had a clarity that was so beautiful. It was so remarkable. It was like, oh, this is it. Could have been like Bill Wilson's. You know, Bill had a bright light experience. Mine wasn't bright. It was kind of like, huh, is this it? My God, I need help. That's a bright light for a guy like me. Saying those three words, I need help, it's tough. If you don't need help, you don't need help. I don't need your help. I don't want your help. Don't even ask for me. Don't give it to me. Get away from me. Somebody, please, somebody somewhere, if you're out there, please help me. I don't know who they are. And then all of a sudden, something happens inside the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. We call it identification. There's how many people in this room tonight? 1,000, I don't know. And you're like, there's way too many people. But there's only one other person that can really help you with your identification, help you with your identification. And that person used to come up to me in meetings. There was several of them over the course of my sobriety. They would come up to me, and they would look at me, and they go, Joe, how are you doing? And I had no idea how to answer that question. I had no idea how to answer that question because I couldn't look him in the eye. My hands were in my pocket. My head was down, and I was just riddled with fear. And I never knew what fear was. I never knew what it was, like the fear that we talk about. And I thought fear was like going into battle. I'm not afraid of that. What are you kidding me? Fear. Fear for me was like going into an AA meeting. Jesus Christ, they're going to ask me to, is there anybody new? What am I going to do? They're going to ask that question. I'm not going to stand up. They're not going to be able to tell that I'm new. I know they can't tell I'm new. I'm pretty good together. I'm not going to, Jesus Christ, I'll wait for everybody else. That's like, I'm not going to stand up. Okay, they're going on to the anybody from out of town. I'm not from out of town. This is cool. I got by the anybody new here, so I'm good. I'm good. This is great. So I sit down and relax, you know. And then somebody would come up to me after the meeting and go, are you new? Me? I'm not new. I was here last week, you know. But it was just this magic magnifying mind that Dr. Paul used to always talk about, that I would just create these incidences that were just so incredibly unmanageable. And who would I blame? You, right? I had no responsibility for what was going on inside of my head. None. Absolutely none. And when I drank, all that stuff just mellowed out. It just mellowed out. You know that that's like when you're just like, I texted Chad this morning. I'm at the airport at 6. The woman next to me is drinking a Bloody Mary. And the two guys next to her were drinking a beer at 6 in the morning. It looked really good. Right? I wonder if I should invite them to Tennessee. I don't know if they were coming here. I don't know. But the Bloody Mary. And then they started talking about the differences of Bloody Marys. I didn't think there was a difference. The guy goes, well, my Bloody Marys are always pinker. What's that mean? Well, we put onion juice in it. I'm like, this is interesting. Onion juice. And she says, well, I asked him to make it a little less spicy because they didn't want it spicy. And I'm kind of obsessing on it. I'm going, wow, I haven't had a Bloody Mary in 30 years. I wonder if they're any better. I'm sweating already. But yeah, that was this morning on the way here. I was up early this morning. I was walking on the docks of San Diego at 4 o'clock this morning, just jazzed. I'll tell you why. So I'm thinking I need to lose weight. When you think you need to lose weight, but you don't talk about losing weight, all you do is think about losing weight, right? So my sponsee from Vegas called me up, and he's whining about how fat he's gotten. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Why don't you do something about it? And he goes, what? I go, well, I need to lose weight. How about we lose 20 pounds in 2 months? He goes, okay. I said, you're kidding. So into action. You can think about this stuff all you want, but unless you actually take the action, you'll never get the results that you're looking for. If you're coming to AA and just coming to AA and just coming to AA, all you're going to got to get is AA. But if you're coming in here and you start taking some action, you start greeting at the door, you start making coffee, you start setting up and setting down chairs, you start helping people get books and literature, you start reaching out for somebody to sponsor you, you start reaching out for somebody to sponsor, you start doing the action here that you have no idea what the results are going to be. All of a sudden, something happens. It's almost like taking a drink. Whenever I take a drink, something happens. But I don't know what it is, but I want more. And I think the same thing happens when you take the action and you be of service in here. Whenever you start being of service, something happens. You have no idea what it is. It might be a question. It might be an idea. It might be a thought coming from somebody else. And all of a sudden, they're challenging you to get the results, to get the answers. And my answers come out of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. They come out of all of our literature. It comes out of the 12 and 12. I love the literature of Alcoholics Anonymous. I love the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. This is the fellowship. This is the fellowship. This is like I can go to meetings and sit there with my arms crossed and bitch about everything that's being said and not bitch about the coffee, bitch about the way the chairs are set up, bitch about the same, they got the same people leading them. I can sit there and judge and judge and judge. And you know what happens? Nothing. But when I come in and I go, hey, did you ever think of look at it like this? Do you ever think maybe we could take this information out of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous and start sharing it with everybody in this room and see what happens? Why would we want to do that? Because something's going to happen that is going to be what Bill Wilson calls being indescribably wonderful. And I think that's what the program has given me for a long time. And it still just amazes me how we develop in here, how we do this stuff, one alcoholic with another alcoholic. It's not 1,200 alcoholics that I'm here helping. I have no idea who that person is in here. When I've done this stuff, and I don't like to do it a lot, it makes me nervous, it makes me afraid, and I usually have to sit down and go, I'm nervous and I'm afraid. And when I do those things, that fear goes away and that nervousness goes away. Several years ago, I was at a conference in Houston, and I went in there and I didn't feel like I fit. I was talking, I don't like, oh, God, what am I going to do? So I walk into the room. I always like to walk into the room that I'm going to be talking in first. And there was a guy in there all by himself. I went up and started talking to him. I said, what's your name? And he told me, what's going on? Well, I'm brand new. And I don't know whether I want to be here or not. And I go, well, I'm not new, and I don't want to be here. Right? And we sat and we talked and talked and talked. I still don't know what the guy's name is. And we talked and talked and talked. And then I told my story, and he said thank you after the story, and that was it. Last international convention, I'm out in Atlanta, and I did a little workshop out there, and I told my story. And you know, they do the green. I don't know where I'm supposed to stand afterwards, by the way. I might stand on a table. I don't know where I'm going to stand, either here, there, or outside. I have no idea. So anyway, they're coming up to greet afterwards, right? And I see every once in a while I'm talking, and I say something that's a little off color. There's something that somebody needs to correct me on. I don't know if you've ever been corrected. So I see this guy in the end of the line, and you know when the people that want to correct you are going like this. Oh, shit. Here we go, right? I'm going to be corrected. And this guy came up, and he goes, do you remember me? I said, no. He said, you sat and talked with me in Houston 5 years ago. We don't think we make a difference. One alcoholic just taking a moment and going, how you doing? Not good. Why? I don't know. You want to talk about it? No. You want to hear my story? No. You want to go to Denny's? No. But something happens. And that's the fellowship that we crave. We craved alcohol. It's a mental obsession, but it's a physical craving. The mental obsession doesn't get you drunk unless you don't talk about it.
It's the physical. Once you take a drink, it sets off this physical craving that you cannot stop without taking another drink, and another, and another, and another. And it's the same craving I think I get for the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, that I come in here and just want to give this thing away. Nobody wants it. Most of the people don't want nothing you have. They don't want nothing to hear. They just leave me alone. But I will guarantee, if you're talking to somebody that doesn't want it, there's three or four other people on the periphery listening to what you're saying. Guarantee it. Because they're riddled with fear. And they're afraid to come up to you and say, hey, can you help me out? And they're listening. They're watching. And they want to hear it. They want to get it. They want to absorb. And then they're going to go, hey, I heard you talking to that guy. I've never seen him again. But can you help me? Sure, man. What do you want to do? I need to get recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. That's an open and a big door. It's a great big door, and it's our responsibility as sober members of Alcoholics Anonymous to carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. Not a message. Not what, frothy emotional appeal? It doesn't say anything about that in my big book. It says, if you can love yourself. Love, no. It says, frothy emotional appeal seldom suffices. Our message has to have depth and weight. If you're in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and they're not talking about Alcoholics Anonymous, it's my responsibility to go, hey, I've got to set you guys straight. And they're not going to like you. They're not going to like you. They're going to probably say you need to get out of here. But that's what we need to do. The fellowship of AA is going like this now. It's going like this. It's not going like this anymore. It's going like this. And there's some wonderful stuff being said, but it's not being said to the right people. My friend Diana goes, I've been to an awful lot of AB meetings. And I go, what the hell's an AB meeting? She says, I don't know, but it's not an AA meeting. And it's so true. I love being sober, and I hate seeing it get watered down with frothy emotional appeal. It seldom suffices. It might suffice for you guys. I don't know why I'm going off on this kick, but I kind of like it. And but it has to do, I think, with my passion. You mentioned the word passion. You say passion to me, and it's like, it's the thing that gave me life. It's the thing that gave me life. When I drank, when I was a kid, my dad died. My mom is still alive. She's 99, right? I talked with her yesterday. She was sick as a dog. She wasn't very happy. You know, when somebody's that old, you kind of worry about them, right? And I said, how you doing? Well, I'm not very good. But I'm thinking about it. My dad died when he was 47. I was 12. Mom raised us. There were six kids in the family, six boys. Kevin, Brian, Gerard, Joe, John, and Philip. That was all of us, you know. And she raised us all. She waited table. She cleaned the houses of people up until she was 90 years old. She cleaned people's houses. And I'll never forget when the oil man used to come to deliver the oil in the wintertime. She didn't have any money. So she used to hide us all behind the couch. We'd be standing there. She says, now be quiet. Just be quiet. And she'd hide behind the closet door, and we'd be behind the couch. And the guy would put the oil in the tank, and he would come up and he'd knock on the door. She didn't have any money to pay him. She didn't answer the door, and he would drive away. And I'll never forget what she says. She says, you know, he always puts the oil in the tank first. He knew that he wasn't going to get the money that day. But he knew eventually he was going to get it. For me, that was like probably, I think, one of the biggest things of being of maximum service that we talk about in here. You know, my mom is just, she's just a wonderful, wonderful person. She was born and raised in Ireland. Dad was born and raised in South Boston. They met at a dance hall and just like true, true love. And she still wears his wedding ring. You know, and I used to go back and forth and visit her quite a bit. And I used to trim her toenails. Right? Now, I'm not being disparaged, but old people's, myself included, toenails are pretty ugly. And I used to sit there trimming her toenails, and she says, you know, you're the only one that will trim my nails. And I'm just going, oh, this is what AA taught me. Service. We fit ourselves to be of little service, as it says in the big book, right, on page 77. We fit ourselves to be of just a little bit of service, right? It says we fit ourselves to be of maximum service. We fit ourselves to be of maximum service so we can be a loving child of a loving God and love the people that we're with. It's just a crazy, 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 crazy thing. And that's where I think happened to me the first time somebody said, "Will you sponsor me?" Oh, Christ, no, please don't do that. No, just that's ridiculous. Well, I'm going to break you. I don't know what to do. What do I do? I can't do this sort of stuff. This is crazy. Sponsor what? I have nothing to give you. Sure. What are we going to do? I don't know. God dang if I know what we're going to do. And then you just start doing this stuff. The first man that I have asked to sponsor me never called me. Ever. Never called me once. And in San Diego, I don't know if you guys do it here, they do cakes and tokens. It's a big deal. It's a big deal for a lot of people. And I don't particularly care for it. And I'll never forget, I was 11 months, 2 weeks sober. And there was a guy that I used to see at the meetings all the time that was really one of these, you know, there's a bunch of people that are really happy to be sober. And when you're not happy, you notice everybody who's happy. Which is pretty much everybody that I ever went to a meeting with when I was newly sober, because I was pretty miserable. I was just an angry, miserable human being. And this guy was going to take a cake that night for 1 year. He had 2 weeks more than me. I'd seen him at meetings. He was a really happy person, and I just didn't want to be there while he was taking the cake. And the guy that I asked to sponsor me had come into the room, and he was sitting behind me in the chair, and I'm a little pissed off because he hadn't called me yet, asked me how I was doing. And I was a little aggravated at the guy at the front of the room, and now I'm aggravated at the guy behind me. And then my friend Rick is sitting right next to me. Now, Rick, I'm pissed off at him because he was a marine biologist. I always wanted to be a marine biologist, but I never wanted to go to school. So I didn't like him. I didn't like the guy behind me. The son of a gun up at the front of the room was really pissing me off. Not only was he pissing me off because two people were giving him the cake. Right, two. So now it's like it's going to be a lot longer because I have to listen to how happy everybody is to have him in their life. He's pissed off. I'm pissed off at him because he's a marine biologist and I want to be a marine biologist. Now the guy behind me says, "Joe, are you okay?" Dale, that actually I asked to sponsor me, and I'm like, "I'm fine. Why don't you call me? I'm dying over here of alcoholism, and you have the hand of AA. Nobody ever reaches out to me. Nothing's going on." The guy up front is really getting down to the point of really being happy with being in recovery. Rick goes, "Joe, are you okay? Well, Jesus, will you leave me alone? I'm fine." And I'm just, my arms are crossed, right? And my veins are popping. You know how that, you know, you're sitting and everybody, you can feel the tension coming off of me in this happy, joyous, and free meeting of AA. This is great. And all of a sudden, Dale, who didn't ever call me, reached out and touched me on the shoulder. Oh, God. I started to cry. And he said, "Let's go outside." And as I stood up, it was on one of those metal chairs. It was a linoleum floor. It was an Alano Club with a linoleum floor and the metal chair and my belt hooked onto the chair. And I stood up really quick, and the chair went flying into the air and came crashing to the ground. And now everybody in the room was looking at me. And I'm crying. And Dale took me outside, and he hugged me. And I'm snotting crying. I'm beyond tears now. And I'm just like... And I'm riding motorcycles, I'm wearing a leather jacket, I'm tough. I am just stay away from me. And I'm standing in Hillcrest in San Diego, and this guy's hugging me and rubbing my back. And I'm really uncomfortable. And then I stopped, and I said, "What the hell was that?" I said. He said, "I think you just took the third step." "What?" He says, "I think you just surrendered to the fellowship of AA." "What does that mean?" He goes, "Joe, you asked me to sponsor you. I haven't seen you or heard a word from you." "What?" He said, "Your responsibility to kind of come and meet me at meetings where I told you I was going to be." The third step, I'm going back. "What do you mean the third step?" He says, "I think you really started, you're surrendering, Joe. You're fighting, and you're stopping right now." And I go, "What do I do?" He goes, "You launch out on a vigorous course of action." What the hell does that mean? And he picked up the book, where I didn't even know he had, and he started reading to me. And he says, this is what you're going to do right now. And I was like, okay. And I want you to go to a lot more meetings. I want you. He told me the meetings to go to. A book study, a 12 and 12 study, a speaker meeting, a men's meeting. And he said, and then you got 3 other days you can do whatever you want with. But I want you to go to a meeting. I went, okay. And I started out on a course of vigorous action that I hadn't stopped. Haven't stopped since. I don't know how it makes sense. I have never seen Dale since. Never have I seen this man since. Never. Never. And he gave me the directions that have saved my life. All you got to do is ask. It's literally all you got to do is ask. And then you got to stay for the answer. You got to stay for the answer. How many times have you been to an A-B meeting where everybody's puking all over the meeting, then they go out and smoke for half an hour, and then they come back in and go, the coffee sucked, I got to get out of here, we got to go. And everybody in the room has actually had given this person the solution to their puke that they had sent all over the meeting. And they go, why don't you stick around? You heard the solution. Ah, I only come here to share. Yeah. And I started out on a vigorous course of action. I haven't stopped since. That was, I'm 28 years sober, so that must have been 24 years ago, 25 years ago, I don't know when it was. It was just such a mishmash. It was such a muddy couple of years, because I didn't really, I wanted to be sober, but I didn't want the fellowship of AA. I hated the fellowship of AA. I despised the fellowship of AA. I'm the type of guy that would walk up to a meeting, look into the room, see who was in the room, get back in my car, and go home. The first guy in a meeting was in Long Beach I started going to, a guy named Marty Leahy. If God bless him, he died years ago. You know, there's some people in AA that absolutely love being sober, and they will go any length to give what they have to somebody else. And usually any length is 5 feet. It's not a long way. I used to watch this guy, Marty, going up to people after the meeting and just, and I would like, I got to get out of here. How do I get out of here? And he would come up to me and he goes, Joe, how you doing? Good, good. You want to go to Millie's with us? Millie's was a little restaurant in Long Beach. I go, sure, I'd love to. Not any intention of going to Millie's. So I go, well, I don't know where it is. Where is it? And he would give me the directions. Exactly where, right, left, parking lot, go in, we're fine. I would drive the car. I was driving a 63 Ford Falcon station wagon. I was living in it, right? So I'm driving the car down, and I pull into the parking lot, and I'm standing there, and I was watching the people that were coming from the meeting going into the restaurant. Now, I'm not saying I was judgmental, but I didn't like any of the people that were going into the restaurant, right? So I would get back into my car, and I would go to this bar called the Mineshaft, a bar. And I would walk into the bar, and there was nobody in there. It was 10 o'clock at night. And I would get a Coke, and I'd stand there by myself. And it was a leather bar. And I'm standing there by myself, and I started to smell leather. And it was a man dressed in leather. And I turned to him, and he goes, I thought you were going to Millie's. I said, what? He goes, I was at the meeting. Marty's my sponsor. I saw him invite you to Millie's. And I went, he goes, it's going to be okay, kid. Someday you're going to get there. And Michael became one of those, they talk about Eskimos, they talk about angels. You know, God puts these people in your life to actually make it okay for you to be absolutely crazy in AA. It's okay to be absolutely crazy in AA. And all these people that come into your life, all of a sudden they start taking, it's like they used to say that your sponsor has the wrench that fits the nut on the top of your head. And he can take the wrench and go click or clock. He can tighten it up or back it off when he needs to. And that's what I think Eskimos are. God puts these people in your life to start carrying a message to somebody that can't hear the message. I couldn't hear the message because I was so judgmental. I was so covered up by pomp and circumstance and worship of other things. And it was usually the fact that I was better than you. I know more about life than you people. Why did you ask me? Nobody would ever ask me. Joe, do you have anything to share?
No.
I would shut down, and I would be so judgmental and so hateful and so spiteful. And all of a sudden, somebody like Marty would come into my life who was loving, kind, and tolerant. And really, like, would you like to go to Millie's? What a stupid question to ask somebody like me. I don't want to go to Millie's. Oh, God, I wish I could. I wish I could walk in there. I can't do it. You guys don't understand what it's like for a drunk like me. I was the type of drunk that used to drink in my house to go out drinking. I used to have to be loaded before I left the door because I was so riddled with fear. And when he says, would you like to go to Millie's? I would say, sure, not having any intention of going to Millie's, knowing that I wasn't going to go to Millie's. Till this one night he said, Joe, would you like to go to Millie's? And I remember my buddy TJ, he's from the Bronx. He goes, Joe, what you got to do is take these and put them by your side. If you're sitting in AA like this or like this, try to do this. It's so much easier for us to approach you. So Marty goes, would you like to go into Millie's? And I'll never forget it. I'm like a bumbling boob again. I go, Marty, will you do me a favor? What? Will you walk in with me? Oh, shit, Joe. I am so sorry. And he walked in with me. Simple. I said I need help, but I said, will you walk into me? Win with me. I said I need help, but I didn't want to say those words. Will you walk in with me? And he walked in with me. And it was a U-shaped booth at this stupid place. Right? I hate U-shaped booths. And you know what he did? He told the two guys in the end, get out, give Joe a nice seat in the middle. Oh, shit. You know? It's like, oh, God. Oh, wait a minute, guys. No, yeah, yeah. Very subtle. Very subtle how super sober people can just make you feel comfortable. You know? Just sit down and get in there and then bookend. And I'm in there and I'm pinned, right? And I've been in Long Beach for 6 months. Never said a word. And they picked up the menu and I ordered a hamburger. Where are you from? I'm from Boston. And then they made me say every word that ended with ah, right? I don't know why. And they started doing what you guys just did. They started inviting me into the fellowship through laughter, through love. It was totally contrary to the way I was thinking. Totally contrary to the way I was thinking. And I believe that was the start. It really didn't happen of me being rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence. Bill Wilson talks about the fourth dimension of existence. Like, where is that? Is that in a fancy neighborhood? Is that somewhere else other than right here and right now? It's got to be something better than this. If you're looking for something better than sobriety, guys, you're going to be disappointed again with Alcoholics Anonymous. That's the best you can get in here is sobriety. And then you start giving that away, it becomes, what's that word? Exponentially bigger and stronger and better and attractive. And attractive. If you make Alcoholics Anonymous attractive to unattractive people, something happens. And it's identification that does it. I was talking to Chad about this several years ago. There's a bunch of people in here probably read the book, Everything I Know I Learned in Kindergarten. When I first got sober, everybody was reading that stupid book. It was written by a rabbi from Boston. A couple of years back, he wrote another book called How Good Do You Have to Be? I'm an avid reader of everything. And I'm reading this book, and it's okay. Every spiritual book is usually the same rewritten crap all over and over again, you know? And then, but there's always a nugget somewhere. There's always a nugget. So he's like, he had his service at the temple, and this guy come up. He says, Rabbi, I have to tell you, your synagogue has saved my life. The rabbi immediately went into this prideful, boastful, what is it we've done? What have I said to change your life? Oh, Rabbi, I'm sorry. There's an AA meeting in the basement on Wednesday night. I said, what? I said, yeah, it's changed my life. The rabbi goes, we have an AA meeting here? He goes, yeah. So the rabbi goes to the AA meeting the next week, and he's flabbergasted by what he felt and experienced. He said, those people are practicing what I've been preaching for years, and they're doing it silently. One alcoholic with another. That's what we do here. We do this not for accolades. This is like, can you imagine if we did this for pride, for ego, for accolades? It really isn't. If you think I'm up here because I'm a big shot, I don't think anybody that's coming up here the whole weekend. Something happens along the way where we can maybe carry a message to 1,000 people. That's all we're doing. And we're nobody special. We're nobody special. We're just loving members of Alcoholics Anonymous. And we're trying to carry a message to whoever wants to hear it. Not everybody's going to listen to it. If you go to your car tonight when you're driving home, or if you stay home or whatever, and you look at the dials on the radio, there's hundreds of variations of stations in the car radio. Why? Because we all listen to different music. And it's the same way with AA. But you come to a conference like this. This is the music. This is the music of love. This is the music of tolerance. This is the music of one alcoholic talking, sharing, giving away to another alcoholic. If you're not hearing it from me, you can hear it out there in the coffee room. You can hear it. You can hear it when people are out there getting the smoke or whatever they're doing. There's a rhythm. There's a beat of AA that is just indescribable. It's indescribable what happens in here. And it really is like, if you're trying to figure it out, you're not living in faith. That's the one thing I tried to do for the longest time. When I was so angry and so bitter and so rageful at people in Alcoholics Anonymous, I was trying to figure it out. If you ever listen to, what's that whack job on TV? Judge Judy. Listen to Judge Judy, right? Well, I'll tell you this Judge Judy story, because I always have Judge Judy stories. So my buddy TJ... Joe, put your arms down, right? TJ was Judge Judy's bailiff when she was a real judge in the Bronx court, right? So she gets an opportunity to do a TV show. And she turns to TJ. She says, TJ, I got an opportunity to go to Hollywood and do a TV show. I'd like you to come and join me. Oh, Judge Judy, that sounds like a stupid idea to me. Oh, he is so pissed off at himself for that question, that answer. So anyway, Judge Judy always says, don't try to figure out where I'm going. If you ever listen to her. And it's kind of like when you're talking with a sponsee. You know, when they're going, I wonder where he's going to go with this. Why did he ask me, what did I do? How do I answer that question? So it's like you're always trying to figure out where you're going to go. Don't try to figure out where I'm going to go with these questions. They're really questions. You don't have to know. I need to know. I got to know. Right? I got to know where we're going. You don't got to know nothing. You really don't. The only thing you need to do is breathe. It's the only thing you need to do around here. And all of a sudden, things start falling into place. It starts falling into a place. And that, I believe, is the fellowship of AA that gets you back into the program. It gets you into that rocket, into that fourth dimension of existence, which is right here and right now. It's an amazing way of life. Just an amazing way of life. And I didn't know that. I didn't know it was going to be that way. I didn't know it was going to be this way because I love drinking. I love drinking. I'm not going to tell any drinking stories because sometimes they get really frothy and I like them. But my head just went, wow. I'll tell you this one story. So I'm at Tendon Bar, right? And I'm at Tendon Bar in Boston. It's 11:30 in the morning. We're opening the club. And Mac was at the one of the bar. He said, Joe, you got a customer, but I don't know if you want to turn around. So I'm like kind of cocky. I turn around. And this guy goes, he's wearing this leather jacket. It's in August. Leather jacket and this cowboy hat. He goes, give me a 16-ounce Crown Royal. No ice. That's a pint, guys. And I poured this 16-ounce Crown Royal into a pint glass, and he went like this. And drank it like that. And it was Stevie Ray Vaughan. And I'm going, you okay? I've never been better, kid. He turned to his manager, he says, pay the man. And he walked out. And he got sober. I hadn't gotten sober yet. There's people you're going to meet along the way that actually you never forget. I'll never forget that moment because I was appalled. What a drunk. But nobody ever saw me drink like that. Nobody ever saw me. I didn't ever want anybody to know I was drunk. I used to go from bar to bar to bar in Boston, and I would struggle to get back home late at night. And that was the same way it was when I come to AA. I would go from meeting to meeting to meeting to meeting, and I never wanted anybody to be, I didn't want to be part of the fellowship. I didn't want to have a home group. Why do I need a home group? I don't need that. I'm fine with what we got. This is crazy. And what happens is you start resisting the changes that are happening. What happens is you don't start to change. If you come in here as an angry, what do you call it, a horse thief, and you don't do anything about it, you're going to be an angry horse thief for a long time. But if you come in here as an angry horse thief and you start practicing these principles and putting these steps in your life, and you start sharing the fact that you've recovered from that angry horse thief, seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, and somebody starts identifying with it and they come up to you and they go, I need what you have to get what you got. How do I do what you do? And you start, well, we do this stuff. We do this stuff. It's not very attractive. It's not very attractive. And it takes time. Ernie Kurtz, a great AA historian, wrote a book a couple years ago called The Spirituality of Imperfection. And he used to write out the word time. And every time he wrote the word time in the book, it was spelled T period, I period, M period, E period. And when you read it, you realized that time not only is an illusion, but it's something we focus on all the time. All the time. My sponsor says, if you look at a gravestone, it has the date you're born, a dash, and the date you died. We focus on the date we're born all our lives. My birthday's coming up. Everybody don't forget. My birthday's coming up. And then when we're gone, everybody focuses on the date we died. But Ken always says, but in the middle of those two dates is a dash. We forget to live in the dash because we're so consumed with everything else. The past and the future. The dash is right here and right now. How long does a dash take? It's instant. I sponsored a guy who was really crazy. Let me tell you something. I've got a couple of crazy stories. This guy had started a big church up in L.A. called the Agape, which is a big religious science church. And him and a group of people helped start this thing. And I mean, a really big deal, right? Really big deal. And he kind of intimidated me. He asked me to sponsor him, but he intimidated me because he was a really big deal in my head. And one day he called me up, crazy as a loon. And I went, well, why don't you meet me at the coffee shop? I met me at the coffee shop, and he was like, okay, what are we going to do? I said, I have no idea. We're going to get a cup of coffee right now. And then he says, well, what are we going to do? I'm crazy. I says, I know you are, but just hang on. We'll get a cup of coffee. So I said, let's get in the car. We'll go for a ride. Where are we going to go? I don't know. We're just going to go. So we get in the car, and we stop at the Balboa Park at the Rose Garden in Balboa Park in San Diego. He says, why are we here? I said, I don't know. So we stop at the Rose Garden. I said, God, I have no idea what to do with this whack job. He's crazy. I don't know what to do with him. What am I going to do with him? So I said, God just told me for you to stop and smell the roses. He said, what? He said, go over there and smell that rose. He goes over and he goes, I go, what's it smell like? He goes, it smells like a rose. I go, describe it. And he described it. I go, go over and smell the yellow rose. And he described a totally different rose. Go smell the pink rose. And he described a totally different rose. And I got my nose and then went, oh my God, they're different. This is crazy. And what happened was, it was a moment of meditation. That's all it was. And I literally said, don't go like, take it from your diaphragm. And he did. And something happened in that transition. He stopped and he smelled the roses and his whole body went, oh. I go, what's going on? He goes, nothing really. And it was just a moment. But it was like, you know, it's like sometimes we make a big deal out of the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. We make a big deal out of meditation. Bill Wilson, God bless him, used to walk the steps streets of Brooklyn and count the cracks in the road. This is our founder. He count the cracks in the road. Every time I go by a rose, you know what I do? From the diaphragm. It's crazy, but every time I'm at the office at work, people go, here he comes. I heard you got roses for your birthday. And my whole body just goes, You know, when we're faced with indecision, it says in the 10th step, what's it say? Go forward and fight. It says stop. Ask God for help. Say, God, I need help. And then some boob comes and says, hey, Joe, I can't pay the rent. And I got the car broken and Jesus, she did this to the dog and the kids. You want to go to Denny's? Ah, God, not Denny's again. And you go to Denny's and you grab a napkin and you grab a pen and you say, start writing. I'm looking for your part. I told you I don't have a part in any of this stuff, Joe. Really? And all of a sudden they start getting it. And that's just a gift. If I sat around and go, I'll come over and we'll rearrange your socks. How's that? Is that good? Oh, that'd be great. You know? It's not about that. It's about maybe getting them out to a meeting. I sponsored a guy named Guy. Still sponsored a guy named Guy. Several years ago, he decided to do a little heroin, right? And he shot it up, and he called me. And he's in the car, and this is right after the movie John Travolta, Pulp Fiction, right? Remember that movie when he's like high and he's looking at the smoke? It was very attractive anyway. So anyway, guy called me and he was high as a kite on heroin. And I'm like, I'm really uncomfortable because it's really attractive. Because this guy, I'm telling you, he's angry. And he's really calm. And I said, guy, you got to do me a favor. I said, what? I said, hang up the phone and don't call me when you're high like this anymore. It's too goddamn attractive to me. And he hung up the phone. Next time I heard from him, he says, Joe, I'm in really big trouble. I'll pick you up. We'll go to a meeting. I picked him up. We went to a meeting. And he was really angry. Really angry. Really racist angry. And we go to a meeting. And we're sitting in the meeting. And he goes, what are we going to do? I said, I don't know. I'm going to ask God. I always say that. I'm going to ask God. I'm sitting in the meeting and I start laughing. He goes, did you get an answer? I said, yeah. What is it? I go, I'll tell you after the meeting. So we're sitting there. He goes, what's the answer? I said, we're going to do 90 meetings in 90 days. You got to be kidding me. Really? That's it? I said, I don't know where I got that from. I said, guy, I've never given that direction. I've never been given that direction. Therefore, dot, 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 if I haven't been given, haven't done that, I have to do it with you. What? I said, we are going to do 90 meetings in 90 days together. I've never given that direction again, by the way, actually. Because I don't know if you guys have ever done it. It's torture. Trust me. It's. But when I tell you he was really angry, And I said, where's all this language coming from? You know what the language was. So I said, I got to ask God for help with this one. So I picked him up on a Friday night. Where are we going? Just get in the car. Shut up. And we go to the Imperial Alano Club in Euclid Avenue in San Diego, which is a black neighborhood, and it's a black Alano Club. And we went into this club. And he goes, why'd you take me here? I said, God told me to take you here. And I said, don't open your mouth. And we went to the group, and they called on him. Long story short, he took a commitment at the end of that meeting, for 6 months, right? I saw the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous take a bitter, angry, resentful skinhead of a man and chip away the anger, the resentment, chip away the things that were blocking him from having a really, really good life. And we went to that damn meeting every Friday night for the next 6 months together. And it was just phenomenal what happens in here. If you don't think you belong, get involved. Get involved. I didn't think I belonged for the longest time in AA. I forget even what time I stop here, but I'm actually having fun. I was about 8 years sober in AA and really struggling with work. I work for a law firm now. I work for this firm for the first guy that I asked to sponsor got me a job where I'm still working. I've been there 25 years. Tom died. I was his power of attorney. I'll never forget. He said, "Joe, I'm really sick. I'm going to need you to pull the plug," just to use a phrase. I go, "Oh, really?" And what an honor. It's happened a couple times for me. But Tom got me this job at the law firm. Where was I going to go with that? I was, that doesn't make a difference. Wow, that's crazy. Big brain fart. So I got the job, blah, 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 Tom, whatever. Oh, so anyway, I'm actually at the law firm. It's kind of like, there it is. Oh, got it, yeah. So I had quit the job at the law firm because they didn't recognize my truly exceptional ability. So I quit. And I went back to a job that I used to have before I got, well, just as I got sober, I used to sell men's underwear on the phone, right? What's so funny? It doesn't make sense, does it? I'm telling you, none of this stuff does. So I used to sell men's underwear over the phone, right? And that was the only job I got. I'm in a meeting. This is why I always talk about if you're whining at a meeting, stick around for the solution. It might not be what you want, but you're going to get a solution. So I'm in a meeting whining that my sponsor told me I needed to get a job. I was trained to be a hard hat deep sea diver, underwater welder, and I was going to make $700 million a year. I was going to make a tremendous amount of money, right? And I couldn't get a job. So he said to me, "You need to get a job. I don't care what you do." So I'm whining in this meeting about the fact that he didn't recognize any of this either. And he says, "Just get a job. I don't care what it is. 8 hours a day, so you don't bug me. Get a job." So I'm in the meeting, and I'm trying to look for somebody to co-sign my crap, and I'm talking about the fact that he was really mean to me, and this girl sitting next to me, and she's writing a name on the card, and after the meeting, she says, "I work for a company downtown, and they're hiring right now if you need a job." I said, "What? Doing what?" She says, "Well, it's selling men's underwear." And I go, "I'm a hard hat deep sea diver. I could make a lot of money." She said, "Do you need a job or not?" I said, "I do. I need a job." So I went and got the job, right? Selling men's underwear over the phone. And it was a hideous job, just terrible. It was a company called International Mail, if you've ever heard of it. Which, if you've never, I mean, do you remember the movie, the one with the guy, Borat? Remember Borat? Remember that thing he wore? Remember that thing? We sold that, all right? And So anyway, yeah. So I went back. I quit the law firm and go back there. And I'm selling the underwear, and I'm just miserable. My life is miserable. I'm going to AA. I'm sponsoring people. My life is I could quote verse and book and just miserable. 8 years sober, miserable, just miserable. And New Year's, and I'm getting sick. I get the flu. And New Year's Eve in San Diego, they have the Alcathon. You guys probably do it. 24 hours of AA and AA and AA. AA. More AA. AA. You know. And it's my anniversary is, I celebrated on the 1st, and it's like New Year's Eve, and I'm just miserable. And I'm in this meeting, and everybody goes, "Joe, you look awful." I go, "I feel terrible. I don't know what's going on." And I had gone to the VA. I was in, because I was in the Coast Guard, I went to the VA. And they ran all sorts of tests on me, and I had no, they said, nothing. "We don't know what's wrong with you." So on New Year's Day, on my 8th birthday, I'm getting all these phone calls. "Joe, it's really great to have you in sobriety, blah, 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 yeah, yeah, whatever. I'm sick. I'm dying over. Leave me alone." So it's just all these phone calls, right? And I'm just Leave me alone. Just get away from me. Just, I don't want nothing to do with you guys. And then I got a call from the VA. And they said, Mr. Conroy, you need to get into the hospital right now. You just tested positive for pneumocystis pneumonia. And I went, wow. And I hung up the phone. And I went to Hippie Jim, who lived next door that I sponsored. We kind of lived in a commune. And Hippie Jim, I said, I sponsored him. So when you're a sponsor, you kind of, you don't want to feel. So I said, Jim, they just told me I have pneumocystis carnini pneumonia. And Jim was a book guy. I said, look it up. And he looked it up. He goes, it's a pneumonia that affects people with a compromised immune system. He goes, wow. I went, yeah. So I called Tom, the first guy that I sponsored. I said, Tom, I need to get over to the VA. Can you give me a ride? Be right there. I get over there, and I said, he goes, what's wrong? I says, I just tested positive for pneumocystis pneumonia. He goes, you're HIV positive? I said, I guess. I had no idea. And I walked into the VA, and the doctor said, Mr. Conroy, you're incredibly sick. I don't know if you know that. I went, yeah, I do. I was weeks away from death, and I didn't know it. And it was so weird. She said, what are we going to do? And I went, Doc, I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous for the past 8 years, and they are always talking about the word surrender. I think I got it. I need help. And she says, it's going to be a really tough road for you. And I go, I don't care. I don't care. And I called up my sponsor, Bus. He goes, Joe, how you doing? Happy birthday. I'm dying, Bus. I'm over at the VA. You can't die. I got to give you a cake on Friday night at the meeting. I'm dying, Bus. Friday night, be there. And I went to the meeting and I walked in and Steve greeted me at the door. Now, I told you I didn't like greeters, and I hugged him. He goes, Joe, you look awful. And I go, let me tell you about my week. He said, man, I'm so sorry, man. You sticking around? He said, I'm taking a cake. So I sat down in the back row where I always sit with my arms crossed, stay away from me. And the whole room slowly started turning to me because one person started telling the next person. And I got up and Bus said, Joe's had a hell of a week. He says, I'm going to let him tell you what's going on. And I actually told him I was HIV positive. I told him I was, at that point, it was full-blown AIDS. And I said, I'm really afraid, guys. I'm 8 years sober. I'm afraid that you're not going to like me for this, which is so fundamentally wrong, but right at the same time. And this group just picked me up. It was like that stupid footprints prayer, you know, that you would see at these meetings, and it's the stupidest damn prayer I've ever seen in my life. It's bull. It doesn't happen till it happens. Till it happens. And these guys would come over to my house. I was reconvalescent in my house, and they would fill up my house with food with they'd put food in my refrigerator. And they would wash my clothes. And they said, how you doing, kid? And, wow. I'm just amazed at the fellowship of AA. I'm amazed because I was just broken. I was broken. My secret was that I was gay. It was a secret that everybody knew. But it was just that I was so separated from everybody. The things that you don't divulge will keep you separated. We will not separate. Only I can separate you. And I was rocketed into that fourth dimension of existence right there and right then. George is going to talk about another gentleman on Sunday morning, where my buddy Mike came to San Diego the same time I was sick and diagnosed. And he saw me at the meeting take the cake. And Mike had just been diagnosed with Lou Gehrig's disease. And he was a married man at the time. And we became, I think, true lovers. Not in that sense, but there was identification beyond Alcoholics Anonymous that we were able to talk about. We used to get in the van and go up to the Pacific Group on Wednesday night, and we would talk about living, not dying. And there were guys in the back of the van that we thought were asleep that were listening to every single conversation. And they would call me up the next day and they go, I can't believe the conversations that you guys have. Just about being alive. That's what AA is. Be alive. Be yourself. Strip away the things that are blocking you from who you are and let us embrace that person. That, oh my God, that's just an amazing thing what happens in here. You strip away all this stuff and all of a sudden you become who God always wanted you to be, and it's really exactly who you wanted to be all along. And it's a spiritual person. The root of the word spiritual is ritual. An AA meeting is a ritual. It's goofy, it's silly, it's stupid, it's just crazy. If you've ever read the pamphlet, A Member's Eye View of Alcoholics Anonymous, one of my favorite pamphlets, if you haven't known. There's a crazy thing. There must come a day, it seems to me, when every alcoholic in and out of AA finally sits down in the presence of his enemies. When he does, he will be amazed to discover that he is attending a meeting of one, himself. The day the alcoholic in AA realizes that his enemy is within, that the tigers are largely creatures of his own design and lurk in his own unconsciousness, that is the day for when him, AA, becomes what I believe its founders meant it to be, a flight into reality. A flight into reality. That's what we do here. We give you back the thing that you pushed away. That's all we do. And we do it for fun and for free. And it's just a process, I believe, of elimination. Nobody that's speaking this weekend is going to give you anything. We're not going to give you anything. We're going to give you the ability to bring out what's best in you. If you're uncomfortable in this conference, look for somebody else that's uncomfortable, and you'll see something happen that will rocket you into that fourth dimension of existence. If you're being snubbed by your friends, go up to somebody else that's being snubbed and go, hey, how you doing? Good. All of a sudden, one alcoholic touches another alcoholic and reaches out. You've got a fellowship that you start to crave. Yeah, yeah. If you don't think this deal works, try it. And if you don't think God will help, all you got to do is ask. Whatever that power greater than yourself is, and it's not yourself, it's a power that's greater than yourself. If it's your sponsor, if it's your AA group, if it's the person at Starbucks, for the longest time, the only relationships I had were the people at Starbucks. I would go in there, and they would say, hi, Joe. That's all they ever said, but I felt part of. And AA's done the same thing over and over and over again. Why does a guy like Steve ask me to come up here? It doesn't make sense to me. Somebody out there is going to go, I wish somebody would do that for me someday. And it might happen, and you might want to go, I don't want to do that sort of stuff. But it's not about you. It's not about me. It's about somebody else out here. Somebody out here needed to hear something I say. Somebody needed to hear something that George is going to say, something that Kent's going to say, something that Steve might say. You know what I mean? It's like just a moment. If you just show up, you get the gift. If you stay home, you're going to get exactly what you stayed home for. You're going to get nothing. Or as they say back home, lugats. You're going to get lugats. Wow. I never thought I'd ever come back to Nashville, Tennessee. When I was flying in today, I was looking at how green it is. California is very brown. When I fly back to Boston, I see how green it is. But this is beautiful here. I don't know if you guys know it. There's a beautiful fellowship. There's a beautiful music here. There's a beautiful light that you all lit up tonight. There's a beautiful light. And the light, wow, you know, there's an old poem, I can't think of what it is. A bell isn't a bell until you ring it. A song isn't a song until you sing it. And I think that's kind of what AA is. unless we get into action, we never get the full effect of Alcoholics Anonymous. If you're coming around here thinking you're going to get this deal by osmosis, you're not going to get it. You're not going to get what I got. You're not going to get what most of the people I know that love this program got. And that's the ability to live happy, joyous, and free right here in this moment. This is the best you can get in Alcoholics Anonymous right here and right now. If you're trying to get something else, you'll be disappointed, like I said over and over again. But if you give away what you've already gotten and something happens that is called love and service, love and service. We all know what love is. We all know what service is. And some of us can't love, but we can serve. And other of us can't serve, but we can love. We all have those two abilities. All it is to take the action to get the results. And those results come from a power that's greater than yourself. Those are the results. It does not make sense. And if you're trying to make sense of it, you're going to be terribly frustrated. If you live in faith, you'll get the gift. Really. I can't tell you how much I've had so much fun here tonight. And I want to hope you all have a terrific weekend. Peace. Good job.